Okay, technical thing. To set the tone for this meeting, I actually suggest we open with the Serenity Prayer, if that's all right, for those of us who wish to join me. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. The topic of tonight's meeting is working step five with a sponsee, and Tim will share for anything between 30 and 45 minutes on the topic, after which the floor will be opened for questions rather than the typical sharing at other meetings. And with that, I will now hand over to Tim.
Good evening, everyone. I'm just going to share the screen whilst reminding myself I'm an alcoholic. There we go. And just good, I can now see you as well as the text. So we're looking at step five tonight, and there's a line here. I'm not going to read the whole thing. There's a line here that causes some problems. But they had not learnt enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty. In a sense, we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. And I used to go to a meeting in Islington on a Sunday evening, and there were a bunch of people there that would do these step fives that would take, they'd go to their sponsor's house, and they'd go to their sponsor's house every Sunday for a few hours. And then within a year or so, they made good progress. They were done. So it took about a year, every Sunday for a year. I had a sponsee once that did. I don't know if you've ever had one that is obsessed with doing inventory. Every time they call you, they say, "How can I read some inventory?" And your heart sinks. And they're always remembering more and more things that they've said or done or thought or felt. And the thing is, it's like some little porridge pot. Obviously, the purpose here is not to recount in step five every single thing you've ever thought, felt, or done, because that would take as long to recount as it took to do it. So if you've lived for 50 years, it would take another 50 years to recount all the things. And often, actually, it takes longer to recount something than the thing took to actually experience. So very clearly, this doesn't mean everything you've ever thought, felt, or done, although that's the meaning it's given sometimes. There's also a little habit. I will get to the point in a minute. There is a habit in AA. Maybe you've noticed this habit. In particular, in big book circles, in particular, in online discussion forums about the big book, where the great virtue is to take things literally and then to ignore things like context and why it was written, who it was written by, who it was written for, what they might have meant by it. I mean, you don't want any of that. You just want to read what it says. That's all very well, but in the Swiss law of obligations, as in AA, we don't just look at the wording, we look at the context. And when you read about early AA, I think they would have, I don't know what they would have said about the idea of step five taking a year of Sundays, but I think I can imagine the looks on their faces. When Dr. Bob took his sponsees through the formal bit of the program. So once you've got the preliminaries out of the way and you do the formal bit of the program, steps 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, before you get out there to make amends and get out there to do 10, 11, and 12, you're doing about 4 hours. So now one could do that today. my observation, I've seen very, very quick goes at the steps, but they invariably need to be done again if they're done in the space of a few hours or a weekend. So I think the happy medium is to do it quickly enough that you get through it, but thoroughly enough that you don't immediately need to redo the steps. And my experience with willing sponsees, 6 weeks to 3 months from soup to nuts, as they say, is pretty standard. And that's not too long. And you're good for a couple of years then, at least. Now, how this relates to step five. Well, how do you follow this sense of all their life story without taking it literally? I think the idea is this. What you want is the step five to contain all of the main highlights so that the person you're sharing with has got a sense of what your life has been. But that can be conveyed. I think that can be conveyed very quickly. Tom W. talks about a friend of his who describes her childhood incredibly vividly. And in a way that you can immediately get pretty much a great sense of what it was like. She said, I was fat and we moved a lot. Now, that says a lot. There's an awful lot of detail actually in there. So I think you can tell the whole story in terms of broad outline, peppered with enough detail. Oh, have I lost you? Everyone's frozen. Oh, there, you're moving again. Good. I thought rigor mortis had set in for a minute. I think you can do a good job of step five in somewhere between, Tom says, about 40 minutes. I think after about an hour and a half, you're not really saying anything new. It's just the same thing over and over. Because the fact is, there's a limited number of big ticket events and there's a limited number of character defects. So I think you can fulfill this criterion of telling someone all your life story without it taking more than an afternoon or part of an afternoon. When we look down here, where is it? The actual instructions on 75. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now, when I take people through step four, it's a slightly unusual way. What I've discovered through trial and error over the years is pretty much everyone's hand needs holding throughout step four, because they're not only doing a step four, they're learning how to do inventory and using their first inventory as the worked example. And unless you walk them through it and have them discuss it with friends along the way, it'll be an absolute dog's dinner. So by the time I've completed the step four with a sponsee, I already know everything. I already know all the twists of character and all the dark crannies of the past because they've been revealed as we've been going through. But I think there is a huge therapeutic value in getting everything out in one conversation. First of all, it gives you cognitively a good oversight as to what the problem is. And secondly, because you've conveyed everything all at once and you can walk all the way around it, it seems manageable. And also, if the sponsor then responds, you know, just normally afterwards, rather than, you know, holding up a cross and hissing and telling them to get out, then that's therapeutic as well. When you realize that all these great big dark secrets and awfulnesses actually don't amount to really much more than a hill of beans, not even Borlotti, just ordinary beans. I think that's therapeutic. But by the same token, if you haven't gone through the detail, there are so many lessons in step four. Unless you've gone through the detail and learnt the lessons along the way, you're going to miss an awful lot. And also, I think a lot of step four, particularly how we do the second column and the third column and then all that forgiveness stuff, it literally starts to rewire your brain. You cannot, in the course of a step five, a 2-hour conversation, completely recast how you view every situation you've ever been in, forgive everyone, and do the job of step five of illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. If you've got someone who isn't cognitively damaged, maybe you could do it. But 19 out of 20 people are basket cases when they get to AA. There's that line in the big book. Maybe your husband lives in that strange world of alcohol. Picked. So I do that in step four. So by the time you get to step five, the fever has abated and you're now on fairly solid ground, and the job is to just get it all out in one conversation, boom. So in a sense, the substance of it has already been done, but by the time you finish step four, but the therapeutic value of getting everything out in one go hasn't been achieved. I give the example of that in my first step five. My sponsor was unaffected by it. And that was the single most important thing I think that had happened to me in AA, was my sponsor being unaffected by my step four. If as a sponsor, you find something particularly shocking, try not to gasp. It's difficult. And I have gasped, but then, you know, we sort of work it out afterwards. But there are some, you're going to hear some gruesome things, particularly where the person at the business end or the creature at the business end of their behavior was innocent. That those are very, very, I find this incredibly difficult to listen to. The more innocent, the harder it is to listen to, and the more defenseless, whether there's a power imbalance. But one does one's best to keep a poker face. But anyway, I'm getting slightly off track. So what I'm getting to is this. We've got everything out on the table, but we need to have this single conversation where we can walk around it in half an hour, 40 minutes, an hour. So I get people to summarize, if possible, their step four. And also I get them to take step five with a couple of other people. By the time you've taken it with three people, you're bored of it. Usually after one, you're still kind of scared of some of the material. It still has power over you. By the time you've shared it with three or four people, the power's gone. And they did that in early AA, first of all. Secondly, it does refer, even in the book itself, to the person. Where is it? Person or persons. There we go, top of 74. Before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Some people object to that because they haven't heard of it before. But if you can just get them to talk to a few people that have done it, they're usually fine with it. Anyone that's very sort of prickly about it says, well, I'll talk about it to you, but I won't talk about it to anyone else. I won't insist, but I'll say, well, if you want to keep everything very under wraps just with one person, I don't think I'm the right sponsor for you because I've got a different approach. My experience with those people that refuse to share with more than one person is they want to maintain the double standards, the stage character that it talks about. They're still ashamed and embarrassed. And I've said to people, well, the only method I know of getting over myself is sharing it myself, or rather the defects and behavior, with enough people that I realize I'm ordinary. If you have a better solution, you go and follow that better solution. I literally don't know of a better solution than that. And I'm not going to co-sign not adopting what I think is the best solution. So go and maybe continue with someone else. It's fine. So I never force anyone, but I don't think you could. And also, when you find out what it is, the little secrets that people are embarrassed about, usually they're absolutely in the middle of the bell curve. It's I've never heard, you know, funnily enough, the people with the most gory stories are often perfectly happy to share them with two or three people. I mean, you don't want to share some of these things at a meeting, of course, or put it in the Grapevine magazine or something, but that's a different matter. So the sort of coyness about inventory, I think, has to be dealt with head on. Anyway, I get people to do a summary. And let's go back. What have we got? Every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. The twists of character are essentially, you might as well read out the whole of the sex inventory. It will take 10 minutes because it's there's not a huge amount of material. If you just read out the words, you're done in 10 minutes, if you've done it properly. The fear inventory, again, if you've done it properly, 5 minutes? So do those two first. Get those out of the way. Maybe take a small handful of resentments, which are illustrative of the whole phenomenon of resentment, and then just read out the highlights from the fourth column. And you can slot those. There are two ways of doing this summary business. You either take your stack of paper and use little post-it notes, rather sort of stationary tags, to tag the bits you're going to read out. Method number two is you actually write out a summary. So every twist of character, you go through the step four looking for character defects, and then you give a juicy example of each one. And this is a very useful way of doing it. And because there's a limited number of twists of character, there's a limited number of character defects. You only need a good example of each one. As Tom says, if you're a thief, remember step five, the exact nature of your wrongs. If you're a thief, the exact nature of your wrongs is you're a thief. There we go. You've said it now. You might want to give an example just so the other person isn't bored and so they believe you. But you literally do not need a catalogue of every single thing you've ever stolen. Similarly, if the exact nature of your wrongs is you are punishing, give your two best examples. And so you can get a handle on your twists of character very simply using the step four as the basis. So step five is not read out your step four. I'll come to where that's an option in a minute. It's taking the step four as the basis and then fulfilling the criteria of step five, twists of character. So there's a limited number of those. Dark crannies of the past. Start with the worst and move backwards. And dark crannies can be things you did, things that were done to you, or things that were just weird and horrible. By the time you've been talking for somewhere between 40 minutes, an hour and a half, if they've done their job in step four, I mean, they're repeating themselves within half an hour, but give it a few minutes and then say, have you noticed? This is the same as what happened with Jessica. This is the same as what happened with Susan. Can you see it's the same thing? You know, it's the same thing. You can, and people, the penny drops. During the course of the step five, you can then say, well, is there anything else which is different? Look through your papers and say, is there any situation which hasn't in substance already been gone through? Or is it all just variations on a theme? And it's always variations on a theme. You can always, the safety net is later on. What you can do is you can always, I'll come to the end of step five at the end. You can always say, well, if there's anything else that occurs to you that you think is a nasty little secret that you feel needs to be conveyed, well, come and just give me a call and we'll run through those. It won't take long. So there's a safety net there. It's not as though if you don't say it now, you're condemned to never saying it in your entire life. Hopefully, if they've done their job also of getting friends in AA to help them write the step four, they've already said anything anyway. So the purpose of this is not necessarily to reveal new secrets that haven't hit the light of day. It's to get a sense of where I have been in belief, thought, and behavior. Okay, so the two basic methods, either you get them to tag the step four for the bits they're going to read out in advance, or you get them to write a summary of twists of character on one side of the page, dark crannies on the other side of the page. Some people, especially if they don't have a job where they've ever had to write a summary, or they've never had an academic context, or they haven't had an academic situation in 20, 30 years where they've had to write a summary, they just go to pieces. If someone goes to pieces, don't force it. So just bring your whole step four. And then you get them to read. And as soon as they start repeating, you say, as I said earlier, you point out the repetitions, say, should we go on to the next one? This is the same. And then you get through it that way. So you just spot the repetitions as soon as they happen, get them to skip and go on to the next one. Say, is there anything materially different about this one? No. You go on to the next one. Great. And that's how you can get through it in one go. And that works in almost every case. With people taking step five with others, it's very important that they trust the person and the person is trustworthy, which is why people they've test driven by, you know, checking that they're doing inventory right with their friends. Hopefully they've already got a sense of who is safe to talk to and who isn't. So if you test drive people on a few minor bits of inventory, you'll find out pretty quickly, is this someone you're compatible with? Although it's tempting sometimes to go to, you know, random, kindly old timers in AA or kindly people generally to share your inventory with, unless they've done this in exactly the same way, you're usually going to get a funny reaction. And the reactions you'll get are these. Well, I don't know why you're doing it like this. I don't know why you're taking your step five with more than one people. Why don't you use the 14 character defects? Or this all looks very, very complicated. Or you haven't gone into this with sufficient depth. I think you need therapy. By the way, I'm a therapist. You know, you'll get all sorts of weird ass reactions which don't help. So although you may know a kindly person, doesn't mean that they're necessarily appropriate. If they haven't done the step five in the same way that you're doing, if they haven't done the step four in the same way that you've done it, don't share your inventory with them. Because even if they're super open to the idea and principle, either they'll think you're not doing it right because you didn't do it the way they did it, or they'll realize you've done it better than they did, and they will start to feel guilty and awkward and then turn it back on you. That happens. So you've got to be super careful. So keep it with people in your home group who you know who are doing it in the same way, where you're speaking a common language, people can keep their mouth shut. If there's any sense of weirdness, don't do it with a close friend, because that can be weird as well. So people that there's some distance from. So if afterwards you want to go and throw up and never see them again, it's kind of fine. You know, you're not going to jeopardize a friendship by doing that. What else do we need to know about step five? So listening to a step five is the most boring thing in the world, I have to say. I know we're supposed to be like really interested in it and really compassionate and fine. Fine. But the truth is, my step four was really boring. My inventory is always really boring. Which is another good reason for keeping it to 1 or 2 hours. So that, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and the light at the end of the tunnel is not an express train hurtling towards you. If you're going to hear a step five in person, here are the top tips. Go for a walk to do it. There's the sense that people are casting their past to the winds, to the four winds, as they're doing the their step five. Some people object to this. They say, well, I don't think it doesn't seem seemly enough that they're not. So I need you to be sitting down opposite me, paying attention. Well, if you want that, you can pay a therapist £150 an hour. You know, you can pay for that. When I was 15 years sober, so not exactly, you know, wet behind the ears or indeed anywhere else anymore. I wanted to do a step five with Brian, and Brian was sober, I know, 30 years at the time. And I said, can I do my step five with you? And he said, and he knew that I worked like 9 to 5. And he said, I am free next Tuesday. Meet me at my house in Camden at 4:30. I have to be in Paddington at 7 o'clock. You can read it. You can walk with me and read it along the way. He didn't ask if I was free then. He said, that's when I'm available. And this is how we're going to do it. And the day was like today. It was pissing down the whole time. So I was trying to hold an umbrella and my pieces of paper as we were walking down, you know, roads and canals with people passing us, giving me very strange looks as I trotted out all of my various things. You're allowed to set, you're allowed to set the terms for how you hear the step five. Some people want to sit opposite someone for 8 hours and love that, and the intensity and the intimacy and poring over any detail. And if you want to do that, don't let me dissuade you. But if you can't face it, it's okay. When someone asks Tom, will you hear my step five? He says something like, next Thursday, I have 40 minutes. And he says they'll respond to him, but I have 10 hours of material. And he'll say, you'll have to find someone with 10 hours of time then, won't you? Exact nature of your wrongs. I'm an ordinary human being. There's not a lot to see. If I'm doing one in person, I go for a walk. If it's in my, don't tell anyone. I don't have sponsees in my home anymore. There were some incidents, and Jonathan, who is scientific, talked about bad energy on more than one occasion. So I don't have people at home, but when I did, I would clean. Because you got up, so you can listen and clean at the same time. Some people don't like that. If they don't want you to clean, ask them to find a sponsor who has a cleaner so they don't have to clean whilst listening to the step five. There are people with cleaners. Go to meetings in Chelsea. They've all got cleaners there. Then you'll have, you know, and that you'll have your sponsor staring at you throughout your step five, wondering why. So walks are good. Listening to a step five, thanks, Lovey. Listening to the step five when you're cleaning is good. If you're going to meet in a cafe, some people won't do it in a cafe, and I sort of fair enough, but park bench will do in that case. But seat where you can look out the window. So get there first, find a good seat where you can look out. There's nothing worse than when you get there and they've nabbed the seat and you're looking at a wall. So nab a seat where you can look out, and you can listen, but you can look out. And I used to get super involved in detail in step fives, and I don't anymore. I think that the great, I think you, I pour over the details with people in step four, fine. But in step five, I think the job is to just get it out in the open. When they're doing step five with someone else, They need to figure out whether some people want loads of input and feedback. Some people do not. I remember hearing a step five of a bloke many years ago. I tried to interrupt to say something at one point, and the look of pure rage on his face. And so I backed off and just listened for the next hour, and we were done. And he was done, and it was fine. Not everyone wants feedback, and that is fine. If they don't want feedback, fine. When they're asking people to do step five, they must always find out what the person's deal is with hearing step fives. So a friend of mine is even more like Vulcan Torquemada, Barrister Rottweiler than me. Hard as that may be to imagine. And he won't hear a step five unless he has absolute license to go in for the kill. And they're a bloodied mess afterwards, but it's very, very helpful. And he's someone that when I'm in trouble, I go to him and I steel myself as I know I'm going to be ripped apart. It's always very, very useful, but it ain't super pleasant always. So, you know, to find out when you're going to hear a step five from someone else, you tell the sponsees, find out what you're in for and ask yourself, am I up for that? And to get agreement on what it's going to look like, what it's going to involve. You don't want to just turn up and have a blank check because odd things can happen sometimes. So I did a step five with Spiritual Paul, who some of you may know. He died a few years ago. And I got there and I started to read. And within a few minutes, he was starting to, we had, let's say, 10 minutes of preliminaries. And I started to read, and about 5 minutes in, his head was hung down. He started shaking his head back and forth to Tim, 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 Tim. And he talked at me. He'd seen me, you know, in meetings. So he got my measure. And again, I was about 15 years sober. And he talked pretty much at me for about 4 hours. And I took notes. Probably one of the most helpful 4 hours of my life. Wouldn't be for everyone. And he did that with everyone. He hardly heard anything, but then talked at them. And, you know, every single person that I've spoken to who did their step five with him, he was absolutely spot on about everything. It's extraordinary. And during the course of the conversation over the 4 hours, all of the dark crannies of the past got somehow sucked out and laid on the table, ditto the twist of character. So people have got very, very different ways of doing it, and that's fine. Tell them as well, if at any point in the step five they get the heebie-jeebies, it's okay to stop. Because if you stop and you're wrong and you should have continued, you can always resume with them or you can just find someone more congenial. But if you get if you don't listen to your instinct, it can get really difficult because it's a very intimate thing to do. So if you get the heebie-jeebies, make your excuses and walk away and then call someone immediately. Is there anything else we need to know? Yeah. So at the end, once you finish this, you get them to go home, sit with a pen and a piece of paper, turn off all of the electronics and sit for an hour and ask say to your higher power, is there any other character defect I haven't talked about? Is there any other incident from the past I haven't talked about that I need to talk about? Write them down at the end of the hour, call your sponsor, read them out, then you're done. And then over the course of your life, if anything else comes up, you can phone them. You can phone them again. And I think the last point, back to this person Well, it's more than one person who always wants to read inventory. I think one of the key purposes, and this should come out of the conversation in step five, is that there's a limited number of character defects and everything else is variations on a theme. Once you've captured the nature of the character defect, being worrisome and fretful, being controlling, being dishonest and manipulative, overworking, being excessively concerned with appearances. You don't have to get the name of the defect. You just have to name the pattern. Once you've got those, you don't need to then spend the rest of your life reanalyzing everything again and again and again and again and again. Simply the job say, it's that. So when I'm engaging in worry, fret, brood, I don't need to look at the detail of what I'm worrying, fretting and brooding about. It's the fact of it which is the problem. Similarly with mental attack on whoever. It doesn't need to be endlessly analyzed. So that's the big thing that should come out of this, is the analysis is there to get you to the conclusions, which is, here are my defects of character for 6 and 7. Once you've got those, you know what you're working with, and there's no need to pore over the workings endlessly. And that's a very important message which should come out of step five. I think that's pretty much it on step five. So I'm going to hand it back to you, Alistair, to see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Tim. That was excellent. The meeting is now open for questions for Tim, which can be done by the raised hand function in Zoom, or you can message me through the chat function and I will ask Tim directly. If all else fails, please wave your hand at the camera and I'll try to get to you. And we try to round up as close to the hour as possible. But if there are more questions, hopefully Tim can stay on it longer. So with that, I'll open it up for questions. James.
Thanks, Alistair. James Alcoholic. Thank you, Tim. And my question is, do you think there's a significant difference to step five or doing step five with somebody when it's their first time that they've ever done step five and when it's a person who maybe has done it once, twice, three times previously? Or is it the same?
No, there's very definitely a difference. If it's the second one, I mean, we've got to define what we mean by first one. If someone's in AA for 2 years and then they drink for 10 years and then they come back, the first step five, when they come back, is like a first step five ever because it's covering years of carnage. But I think it's absolutely the case that once you've done one in a particular bout of sobriety or period in recovery, once you've done a step four and five and you've basically covered the past, going back to your childhood and all that, I think one must be very, very strict with oneself about not letting the inventory process and step five turn into what Clancy would call socially acceptable self-indulgence, socially acceptable self-absorption. And there's with AA and the steps, it's rather like Goldilocks. You know, the porridge is either too hot or the porridge is either too cold, and actually the porridge needs to be somewhere in between. So, you know, what one lot of AA don't do, never ever touch the steps. I'm all right. After 20 years, I've done the steps. I don't need the steps. If you've ever been to Canning Town. Or, by contrast, You've got, I've done the steps every year for the last 37 years. And every time it's this great production number with these endless truths and peeling the layers of the onion. Oh, God, spare me. I like the middle ground where you do it thoroughly, but you don't turn it. I don't want to turn my whole recovery into the Tim's Inventory show. Really? No. At some point, you've got to change and let go of all this crap. So I think particularly with subsequent steps 4 and 5, they should be brutally succinct. And if you look at the experience of other traditions, it's very helpful here. So the Anglo-Catholics and the Episcopalians in America, I think I'm right in saying that. I'm not very good at Christian denominations, but there we go. Have something called the, I think Catholics do it too, sacraments of penance. And what they do is they give people a list of character defects, a complete list of character defects. There's a list in the St. Augustine Prayer Book, which is a splendid little volume. And they say, right, go away. Here's a complete list of human character defects. And it's an absolutely brilliant list, by the way. My favorite one of which is beautifully expressed. The initiation, collection, and retailing of gossip. I just love that phrase, the retailing of gossip. And I say, go away and come back and tell us which of these character defects you have, give an example of each. And you're done in an hour. You're done in less than an hour. So I think it's very important with subsequent ones to be brisk and non-self-indulgent. We're cleaning house in order to make ourselves more effective in the world. It's not an end in itself. I remember someone saying in a meeting, I shouldn't be recorded saying this. This is all very dangerous. I heard someone in a meeting once saying, the journey of recovery is a journey into the discovery of self. I thought, oh God, there's this. I'm just an ordinary person. There isn't a huge amount of this. There's a life to be lived out there. That's what I want to be getting on with. So it's a means to an end. Now, the reason for saying that is because the first one is very important. So although when it's someone's first experience of a step 4 and 5, you do your best in the step 4 process and in the preparation for the step 5 to get them to be succinct and concise and to, you know, chivvy them along a little bit. Sometimes they just need to talk and you have to break the session into 2 or 3 to get it all out. And if it's the first one, that's important because there may well be things which have never hit the light of day. Sometimes there's stuff that doesn't get written on the step 4 that needs to come out in the step 5. So I'm super lenient with the first one. You do your best to keep it contained. But if it breaks the banks of the river, fine. You just have to let it because you can't constrain the experience. The other thing as well, with this method of going through the step 4 with a fine tooth comb, so everything's been read out already, I don't think I've had an experience of a step 5 which has taken more than 40 minutes. Everyone's fine with it and everything's out already. Where you get these incredibly intense, strained step 5s, where you're trying to get all the secrets out, get a handle on the patterns, do the rewiring, reframe all of these situations with huge amounts of resistance going on. That's what happens if you don't lead someone step by step through the step 4. I found that before I did it the way I currently do it, two out of three step 5s were deeply unsatisfactory for half a dozen reasons. And then you have to spend the next 6 months catching up and making and compensating for the mess created by trying to do too much in a step 5. And that's the problem with the step, the sort of traditional AA methods is, I shouldn't really be saying this on tape, but the traditional way of doing it is you sort of send your little sponsee off into the darkness with their worksheets. And when they come back 6 months later, sort of blinking in the light to read it out, you realize it's an absolute, it's a shit shower. It's a dog's dinner. They haven't understood it. It's a complete mess. Full of self-justification, missed the point completely, and then you're trying to redo the step four as you're doing the step five and get them to write stuff down. You can't do a good job of anything. If I may quote Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation, it is better to whole-ass one thing than to half-ass two or more things. So with step five, this aim of getting everything out onto the table in one go, if you've achieved all of the other possible objectives during the course of the step four, the step five is left with as a clean experience of just get everything out on the table at once. And I dread it's, I'm sure you've had this with people who have had a lot of mental illness. There's a huge amount of step work in the step four involved in reframing situations to help people see them rationally and sanely. And that takes time for the water to seep through the parched ground. It can't be done in the context of step five. So you get everything else out of the way first, and then you don't have the problem of the constraint in step five. So I hope that's answered the question.
Yeah, thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Any other questions for Tim?
If there is a gap, I can cover step six and seven in about 3 minutes.
Can I ask one question? The big book goes, some detail. It talks about, you know, choosing the right person, and talks about doctors and psychiatrists and even members of the family, I think. You mentioned that people not willing to do with multiple people. But have you ever had experience of someone saying, "Well, I'm not going to do it with you. I'm going to do it with my psychiatrist or a doctor"? Or
yeah, okay. So I think this is there's a couple of topics here. The first one is the question of doing your step five with a therapist or a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And the question is one of domains. It's very important that the step four be a moral inventory far more than it is a psychological one. It does involve rewiring the thinking and looking at where your thinking is skewy and not where you've been trusting false ways of assessing situations. But it's chiefly a moral inventory. And then in step five, it's the exact nature of your wrongs. And so it doesn't fall within the domain of most. There are going to be exceptions. It doesn't fall that the therapists are not there as moral guides. Spiritual teachers might be. The clergy might be, although they'll have a different take again. I know people who've had great success taking step five with members of the clergy. Some are not used to lurid disclosures, contrary to popular belief. So again, you've got to find out what you're letting yourself in for. But the thing about the therapy side of things, some therapists are open to hearing step fives. There are therapists who are step 12 people themselves and are open about that, and will hear a step five as a step five. But I'm a little bit skeptical about, you know, 6 months or a year's worth of ordinary therapy, which has got its own objectives, being co-opted to say, well, because I've talked about all this in therapy, I've therefore, by virtue of that, I've done my step five. And you could line up all the letters of the alphabet and say, well, all of my defects lie in these 26 letters. It doesn't mean you've actually identified and got them out onto the table in the manner that's suggested. There's one exception to the foregoing, and it sometimes people have had really very frightful or difficult experiences which are outside the scope of ordinary human experience. And in those, what they will sometimes do is mention those to me, but then go into detail on those with professionals who are fully equipped to hear those disclosures and discuss them. If they don't want to share their stuff with me, I'm the wrong sponsor. Because sponsorship is about 5% presenting what the program is, and about 95% application to what the person's life. If they don't want to talk about their lives, there's nothing to use as the vehicle for showing them how to work the program. So if someone doesn't want to disclose their stuff to me, that's fine. I mean, I wouldn't want to. I'm the last person I would talk to. I was quite remarkable that the phone rings at all, frankly. But way I talk to people. But you get the point. It doesn't matter if they don't want to talk to me. But as long as they talk to someone, that's the point. They must talk. They must tell the whole thing to someone.
Makes sense. That makes sense. Any other questions on step five, Tim? We've got sort of 6 minutes. If there's not any questions, Tim, what do you feel? 6 minutes in.
Yeah, I can absolutely, because there's hardly anything to say. So step six, where are we? There we go. If we have answered to our satisfaction, so you've got all the secrets out and the character defects, then we look at step six, and we've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. That, and what the willingness is to adopt new beliefs, to be custodians and guardians of our own thinking, and to act right. That's what the willingness is. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. I think a very simple question is posed in step six, which is the way I've been believing, thinking and behaving up to now in aggregate is the cause of my life. You look at my life, where does it come from? It comes from those things. And that way of believing, thinking and doing is a package deal. It can't be subdivided into little compartments and categories where you pore over each one and say, well, do I want this or do I not want this? It's an entire system. So the question is, do I want to let go of the system? Now, if there is an objection to a particular, there shouldn't be any objections, because if you look at it at the level of the system, there should be no objections in principle. If there is something which is sticking, you can look at what is, there must be some kick you're getting out of the defect, which you're not willing. So you want the defect to go, but you're lacking willingness because there's some benefit you think you're going to forego. And a good example, which is very common, certainly amongst men, is, well, I know this is a sententious one. No, I can't even talk about that. Yeah, I can't go into details, but on certain character defects, because it gets too sententious. But the point is, if there is a behavior pattern someone won't let go of, that really won't do at the level of principle, because it is absolute surrender. But if there is one, then you look at, well, what is the benefit that is stopping you from being absolutely willing? And then in step seven, if you're willing, if you're completely willing, essentially to say, I would like a new set of tools for living. You don't change. The set of tools you're using for living will change. Would you like a new set of tools for living? Yes or no? Pick. You look at your life now. Do you want to keep it, or do you? It's like a game show where there are two buttons, red one and a green one. So if you want the green one and you want to go ahead, you say the prayer, and then step seven is done. How do defects get removed is very simple, in my experience. You take steps 8 and 9 because you said you were going to in step three. So we don't need to negotiate this. It's already been agreed, and just get it done as an administrative exercise. And then if you live in 10, 11 and 12, the practice of those changes you're adopting new ways of believing, thinking and acting. And in so doing, the old ones are removed. So the direction as to what to believe, what to think and what to do comes from God. Power to do that comes from God. So it is God removing them, but we must take the initiative. So I don't linger any longer than that on 6 and 7. That's kind of it, but maybe people have questions on those.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, any questions? A small one, a short one. Do you have someone, you know, after completed their step five, they've been sat in a quiet place for an hour, you have them quickly go into step 6 and 7 as soon as possible?
Yeah, there's nothing to wait for. And then to get immediately into step 8, once you've said the step 7 prayer, the way you implement your declaration of willingness to have God remove your character defects is to get on with the business of steps 8 and 9 as a sort of exercise over here, and 10, 11 and 12 as the daily exercise. There's one more thing that's worth saying. I must take the initiative for adopting new beliefs, for being a custodian of my own thinking, deciding which thoughts which occur to me I'm going to run with, which I'm going to reject, how I'm going to spend my day. What God seems to do, or what seems to happen as a function of that, is the old beliefs die away. The bad thoughts don't come as often or as intrusively, and bad behavior patterns cease to tempt. I can't do any of that. God does all of that. But if I attend to what I can attend to diligently, then God does the rest. So it's like we do 1%, God does 99%, but without our 1%, the other 99% can't happen. That's how I figure it.
Does anyone have any questions for Tim on that? 6 and 7. Okay. With that, I'd like to hand it back to Tim to close the meeting in the usual way.
Well, thank you everyone for being here. Yes, would you please help me close with the serenity prayer? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
courage to change things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you.
Thanks,
don't forget
Tim.
To turn the recording on, Alistair.
Oh, yes. Thank you. We'll do that now.